The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, how are you doing today, sir?
Yeah, Boker Tov. We're still in the midst of a storm. The storm itself is a little strange because we were warned that this is going to be very serious weather conditions, lots of rain, windy, and indeed it has been definitely cooler. Temperatures in the central area dip below 10 degrees this morning, which by Israeli standards is pretty cold, and there's been windy conditions with a few branches, all dead branches from trees being blown off, a case of a person who was quite seriously injured by a falling tree because of very, very severe windy conditions, certainly lots of rain and a bit of hail, dark skies, you know, quite ominous conditions. But to say that this is kind of on the scale of a storm that really warrants a name and people staying home from work because of bad weather, I'm not sure that this is the case. And I think that, you know, this is a typical situation where Israel kind of overreacts just a little. We are so accustomed to stable, summery weather conditions that when we have a little bit of extreme weather, and I say it's just marginally extreme, I think by European standards, this would be kind of a standard day in the office, but by our standards, obviously a little bit different, people have a tendency to overreact just a little bit. And I just wondered to what extent the authorities have been responsible for it. I mean, I think it is the responsible thing to do to warn people about possible flooding. Unfortunately, the drainage system in Israel generally is not good enough. You know, there is this issue of cost benefit. How many days of the year do we really have rain to justify spending a lot of money on good drainage infrastructure? There's always that argument that we have to think about, but when the rain does come, and it comes down when it rains very heavily here. But, you know, I think the storm is a little bit more of a storm in a teacup than a real storm, you know, by independent standards. Certainly cold, certainly wet, certainly windy. So I hope that people out there will be keeping warm and safe, but not overreacting. I think it's fine to go to school, and I think it's fine to go to work. There has been quite a thick blanket of snow on the Hermon, which is good news, because although we feel the cold from the wind that blows down into the central part of Israel, it does mean that there will be snow to melt at the end of the winter, and of course that water will run into the Kinneret. That is always very welcome indeed.
Well, what do they say about scouts? Ready, eye ready. It's always better to be over-prepared than under-prepared. Talking about being over-prepared and making sure that the consequences aren't felt on a worldwide basis, especially with regards to Israel's great concern with COVID, they are now placing the US and Canada on the red list as of today. So let's take that question into two parts. Why are the US and Canada being placed on the red list, and what is the current overall state of COVID in Israel?
So Israel has been slowly but surely classifying various countries as being red. The consequences of a country going red means that Israelis traveling to and from that country have certain restrictions placed on them. Israelis essentially are not allowed to travel to red countries, and those Israelis who happen to be there and will want to return home are forced to go into an extended period of quarantine as opposed to traveling home to Israel from non-red countries. So the government has already approved classification of the United States and Canada, as well as Italy, Belgium, Germany, Hungary, Morocco, Portugal, Switzerland, and Turkey as red countries. It hasn't been passed by the Knesset. This is just a proposal that's gone through the government. It is expected to go through the Knesset today. And so therefore there will be greater restrictions on Israelis traveling to and from different countries around the world. There has been a recommendation by the Prime Minister, who seems to be taking much more of a safety first approach in general. There has been a recommendation that all countries should go on the red list, and that the same restrictions should apply uniformly. The way in which countries are placed on the red list, or the reason, is simply because of the instance of how many people are being diagnosed with the coronavirus in those countries over the past few days. And so obviously what we're seeing is a massive uptick, particularly now around North America and Europe, in the number of new cases being diagnosed. And this is particularly because of the Omicron variant. In Israel, we had 1,000 new cases of coronavirus diagnosed in one single day for the first time in a very, very long time, in a few months. So I think that was the first time since October that we had more than 1,000 cases diagnosed. There has been a suggestion that a lot more restrictions should be placed on schools. The Prime Minister has even suggested that children who are not vaccinated should not be allowed to attend classes face-to-face. At the moment, schools are generally all open for face-to-face classes, except for if there's a particular outbreak at a single school for whatever reason, like there was in Jerusalem, where there was quite a significant outbreak, then the school was closed down and was limited to remote teaching rather than face-to-face. But the Prime Minister would quite like to see children who are not vaccinated prevented from going to school in general. There is a lot of disagreement within the government at the moment. I understand that the Prime Minister and the Minister of Health last night, held a meeting. They were not in agreement as to what should be done next. The Prime Minister wants to be much, much more conservative in placing restrictions. Other members of the government are not enthusiastic at all about closing things down, about creating further restrictions. We already have the restrictions on the borders. So it's not clear exactly what the government is going to choose to do. Up until now, we've had this philosophy of let's get vaccinated, let's do testing, and let's keep the economy open. Now there is some prevarication about what should be done. There was talk about implementing the green passes in the malls at the last minute. That did not take place. I was at a mall over the weekend and no green passes were required. One could just go in and come out quite freely. But it's true to say that restaurants and places like that are being a little bit more pedantic about checking people's green passes before allowing them in. So there isn't a uniform view. There are so many different contrary opinions about what we should be doing right now. Of course, the main concern is how our medical system is doing. Right now, they're doing okay. I think we have just something like 80 patients considered to be seriously ill in hospitals suffering from the coronavirus. The concern, of course, is that that could increase very, very rapidly. Interestingly, those people who are considered to be seriously ill are not from the Omicron virus. They are still people who are carriers of the Delta virus and who've suffered serious illness as a result of that. So there is still at least anecdotal evidence. I don't know if it's scientifically proven yet, but certainly anecdotal evidence that Omicron, while being very, very contagious, is less severe in its symptoms, less heavy on the medical system. And of course, that's our main concern, that our medical system can cope with whatever is thrown at it. And what we don't want is to have a situation where there are no more beds in hospitals because there's so many people seriously ill. So it's going to be interesting to see what the government decides over the coming days. And it's very difficult to predict what it might be because there are so many contrary views at the moment as to what we should be doing.
Yeah, very important to understand what's going on with this Omicron and with the world coming together to study this. Our understanding is improving, but like you said, very contagious, doesn't seem to be as dangerous as the previous variants, but that does not mean we must let our guard up. Moving on, member of the Knesset, Aryeh Deri, is due to agree to a plea bargain that will keep him out of jail but force him to resign his Knesset seat. What are the consequences? Give us a little bit of background. Give us the consequences, and would the Knesset have to hold a by-election for his seat to be replaced, or can the party just replace him?
So Aryeh Deri is the leader of the Shas party. He has already served a jail term for bribery and corruption while in the position of a minister of government. He's completed that jail term. He served his time. He was allowed back into the Knesset. He has retaken leadership of Shas. I was very, very doubtful about the logic of allowing somebody who has been already convicted of abusing public office for their own benefit or for the benefit of others who they have an interest to try to help. I have my doubts as to whether people like that should ever be allowed back into public office again. Israel has a slightly different view, and the view is that everybody deserves at least another chance. Aryeh Deri was given his second chance, and he's now pleaded guilty to what they have termed in the press mild tax offences. Now, that obviously means that he has done something wrong in terms of paying taxes. All Israeli nationals, citizens are required to pay tax. The tax system is very onerous in Israel. There should really be no exceptions. Once everybody is required to pay tax, we should be all required by the same measure. It seems like Aryeh Deri has seen things slightly differently. And now he has, and now it seems as if though he will be entering into this plea bargain by which he will plead guilty to these so-called minor tax offences. He will then have to resign his Knesset seat, or the Knesset seat will be effectively taken away from him as somebody who is convicted of a criminal offence. He will have to serve some time outside of the Knesset. Apparently, according to the plea bargain details, he will continue still to be leader of Shas, of the Shas party, but just from outside the Knesset. There will be no requirement for by-elections or anything like that. We don't have a constituency system, so there's no by-election system. What happens here is that the moment a member of Knesset resigns their seat or is forced to resign for whatever reason, then the next person on their party's list simply moves up into the Knesset. So that list was already determined prior to the last election. That list still exists. It doesn't change at all. And even though people think at the time of the election that those people who are below on the bottom levels of the list and don't manage to get a seat in Knesset become irrelevant to the whole functioning system, that's not entirely true, because what then happens, we have the so-called Norwegian system that comes into play, whereby those members of Knesset who are appointed to be a minister in the government usually resign their seats. So they don't sit in the Knesset, they serve in the government, and they're entitled to attend Knesset hearings from time to time as a member of the government. But it just then allows more junior members to move up the list and take up seats in the Knesset. This will be the case with Aryeh Deri. The next person on the Shas list will simply assume his seat. And we understand that at the time of the next election, whenever that's going to be, according to this plea bargain, he will be entitled to run for Knesset again. So, again, I have to just be very honest and say that I'm not sure that this is really the way that a business politics should be run. The government should be run. The Knesset should be run. I think that people who have been convicted of criminal offences now multiple times, not just once, but clearly more than once, I think a more stringent approach needs to be taken. People like that, moral turpitude is a term that's often used for people who are excluded from government positions and are not allowed to serve. But in the case of Aryeh Deri, I'm not sure. So we will see exactly what the details of his plea bargain are, but it seems almost certain that he will be out of the Knesset at least until the next election. And I hope that at least this will teach him a lesson, and that he will be able to run his affairs a little bit more stringently and with a little bit more vision towards what the public sees as well, and what he's obliged to do as a citizen rather than take advantage of his political office.
Well, what I took away from that, apart from Deri and his resignation, is the inner mechanisms and workings of the Knesset and the functionality of the list system and how it operates in Israel. So thank you for that. I think a lot of our listeners appreciated getting the understanding of the inner workings of your parliamentary system. Moving on, it's reported that Israel is threatening to resume targeted assassinations. Why is this?
Yeah, I mean, this whole issue of target assassinations has been used by Israel in the past as a policy, highly controversial. And what it involves is essentially the Israeli security services using their massive amounts of intelligence in order to reduce the terrorism that Israelis are required to suffer from, rather than just allowing it to go ahead. And obviously there is this dilemma that the Israeli security services often have to deal with, which is having picked up information about things that are happening behind the scenes and potential attacks that might be carried out. To what extent is Israel obliged to act ahead of time in order to prevent these things from happening? And obviously within all of that comes how accurate this information really is, because even though Israel has a very good reputation for being able to pick up on intelligence information and to gather what's happening behind the scenes, what plans are being made before they actually happen, there is always the risk that those plans may not actually happen, or the intelligence information might not be quite as accurate as you would want it to be. And then, of course, the danger exists that the Israeli security service will take preemptive action without proper justification due to the fact that the information might not be so accurate. But the point is that with this uptick that we discussed yesterday in terrorism that Israelis have had to suffer in recent weeks and months, there is the view that using the intelligence advantage that Israel has is a way to somehow seize back control of the situation, as we see that more random terror attacks are taking place, the likes of which we saw last week with the death, unfortunately, of a young father and other people being injured, and generally people feeling unsafe because of attacks that might take place. Israel likes to take to seize the advantage, to use what intelligence information they're able to use, and to somehow take back the high ground. And we understand that Egyptian officials who are in the Gaza Strip at the moment to discuss preserving the current ceasefire with officials in Hamas have apparently passed on a message from Israel to the Hamas government saying that Israel is seriously considering re-implementing the targeted assassinations that it has from time to time implemented. We know that this sends a shiver through the spines of the leadership, particularly those people who are involved with driving terror activities, with controlling things, perhaps controlling the purse strings, controlling the strategy, yeah, controlling the flow of arms and ammunition. They know that Israel knows exactly who they are and where they are. So this is, I think, designed to frighten them into scaling back their activities. I don't know that Israel is going to implement this policy just without giving it serious consideration or for no specific reason.
Well,
it's certainly something
like,
that's available.
Like they
there.
Say, you know, forewarned is forearmed. If the intelligence is good, a precision preemptive strike may be necessary. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Learned a lot about the Knesset. Thank you for the updates on the COVID and for the targeted assassinations. Look forward to our next chat.